The following content is meant purely for educational and informational purposes and should not be relied upon as financial, investment, legal, tax, or any other professional advice. This is the Fundamentals Podcast, where we demystify crypto and help you navigate this ever-evolving internet-native economy. In this episode, we're joined by Michael Nadeau, founder of the DeFi Report, a Web3 research firm. Michael recently published the Ethereum Investment Framework, which is a robust document designed to save people hundreds of hours of research by combining all the necessary knowledge about Ethereum into one document in a non-technical and easy-to-navigate format. The Ethereum Investment Framework is the culmination of 3 years of research and analysis within the Web3 space and 12 years of experience in the worlds of business, technology, finance, and accounting. Michael's goal for the document is to become the industry standard for analyzing the Ethereum network from first principles and on-chain data. Over the next 45 minutes, we dive into what inspired the creation of the framework, its main components, how readers can best utilize it, the framework's approach to valuing Ethereum, and much more. Hello, Michael. Welcome back to the Fundamentals Podcast. It's great to have you on.
Awesome to be here, Oscar. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, the last time we spoke was about 3 months ago, where we touched base on valuing blockchains, and we got some really great feedback on that episode because these are still topics that I don't think are spoken about enough publicly, and every investor in the space is pretty much building their own frameworks and theses to try to value these different blockchain networks. And it's great that you have been diving even deeper into that topic. I know that you've been working on everything related to valuing these networks for several years probably now, but especially the last few months, you recently put out the Ethereum Investment Framework, which I can pretty confidently say is the most comprehensive and robust valuation framework for any crypto network out there today. So very much paving the path for how we should be looking at these networks from an investment point of view. So big kudos to you. You're doing a great service for the whole industry, honestly, with putting that out there.
Appreciate it. Yeah, no, it's a ton of work, and it's been spent a lot of time head down over the last few months, like you said, looking, combing through data. Over the last, you know, probably year and a half, 2 years, have spent a ton of time really trying to assess network effects within each of these ecosystems to form like a very high level thesis, and have spent a lot of time there. And then the framework was really a way to kind of go through all of that research and present it in a way that can really kind of bring investors along with, you know, a lot of these new concepts that are being introduced by crypto and public blockchains. There's just a lot to kind of grasp just from like open source technology and just understanding how new technologies are implemented and deployed. There's just a lot of like critical concepts to get first. And then we get into on-chain data. How do you assess network effects? How do you think through how value is kind of moving through the tech stack? So that was kind of the goal of the report, and it's great to get feedback from the community as well. So
yeah, definitely. We need frameworks. Frameworks are one of the most important ways for investors to make it easier for investors to start entering the space and for people to really start understanding this new asset class, because so many parts of it we haven't seen before anywhere else. So the perspective that you bring with this report is so incredibly valuable. And what I want to do in this session, because the report itself is over 100 pages of packed alpha, and we won't be able to dive into all of the details around it. What I would love to do is get you to walk us through what inspired you to create the framework. What is the actual content of it? How do you approach valuing Ethereum, and how someone looking to benefit from this report should approach utilizing it? So to get right to it, it would be great if you can speak about what inspired you initially to create the Ethereum Investment Framework.
Yeah, great question. For me, it's almost like going back, like I've been in crypto professionally for over 3 years now. It's been studying it for 5+ years. And it was almost like, how do I go back to Mike Nadeau 5 years ago and sort of pull him up the ladder? And so, you know, as I mentioned, like crypto is new. There's all these new concepts related to public blockchains, crypto assets. The business models are different. The data is different. The KPIs, benchmarks. These are all new concepts. And then you layer on top of that the perception of crypto in the market, the sort of conflicting views that you get from traditional investors, crypto natives, and there's just a lot of noise in the space. So my strategy has always been just to anchor to data and then tell the story through data and through these core concepts. So that was really kind of what inspired it. It's designed to save people time, right? That's really the goal of this, is to help somebody understand all the core concepts, all of the data. How do you start to think through a framework for how you would evaluate and value an ecosystem like Ethereum? There's obviously lots of interest in crypto, and to get the necessary skills, data, analysis, you know, a lot of the firms that I talk to have to hire an analyst plus a data scientist. And so I'm trying to kind of combine those two things into one report and just kind of get people from zero to one as fast as possible.
Yeah, 100%. And also kind of abstracting the technicality that is related to a lot of the operations of blockchains, which lowers the threshold so much for people coming from, say, traditional finance to getting into understanding what's going on. So that is great. And before we dive in deeper, I just quickly want to mention to everyone listening that the link to this report is in the show notes and you can download it for free. And it could be pretty valuable to kind of open it up on whatever device you are on and eye through it while we walk through it at a high level with Michael here during the session. And then afterwards, kind of dive deeper into the details. Now, at a high level, how would you describe the main components or pillars of this investment framework?
Yeah, so at a high level, I would say like the first thing that we try to talk through is like, what is the business model, right? What is the business model of Ethereum? And then what problems does it solve in the world? So we kind of walk through core value proposition. What is that? Why is that important? And then we get into these critical sort of investment concepts, things like network effects, things like Moore's Law, things like sort of how the development of Ethereum is mirroring the development of the internet in many ways. And we go through this in a very non-technical way. So we use lots of analogies and ways that like a traditional investor can sort of grasp a lot of these concepts. And then from there, we establish, okay, this thing has lots of network effects. What does that start to look like in terms of these flywheels that come off the sort of foundation of network effects? And then, you know, there's a tech stack here, right? So there's value that accrues through different layers of the tech stack. As the ecosystem matures, the way that value is accruing through the tech stack is also changing. So this is going to be a quarterly report so that we update it's a moving target. We're going to update the data on a quarterly basis. There's obviously new technology developments that are constantly happening within the Ethereum ecosystem. So we're covering all of that. And then we use data to compare Ethereum to other networks as well to sort of show how you could get a relative valuation as well. But those are some of the core concepts. We talk about risk. We talk about drivers of adoption over the years, some of the challenges with regulation and things like that as well. But it's really just a high level view of everything an investor would need to know to kind of walk through the entire ecosystem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was just about to say before you said that last sentence that essentially you cover everything related to Ethereum.
We left no rock unturned. That's for sure. Yep.
Yeah, but I think that is a great approach because you need to understand from the target audience perspective, of course, many people don't have the full context of, say, Ethereum's history as well. So the fact that you open up the history and are able to build the connections to how the internet has developed and where Ethereum fits kind of on that development curve, and then going into the technical advancements and developments in the Ethereum protocol, and then comparing it to everything else out on the market. I think that is a great framework and an easy approach. But yeah, now, as you alluded to the historical evolution of the internet and how Ethereum's development has certain similarities to that, where do you see Ethereum at the moment fitting into this in historical context?
Yeah, so this is a great framework. I think it's always good to, I think the Ethereum investment framework does a decent job, and this is what I've sort of targeted, is of zooming in and out, right? So zooming out and taking high level views historically, how do technologies get implemented? We're going to talk about that. And then also zooming in on data, network effects, all of that. But yeah, from this framework comes from Technological Revolutions in Financial Capital, which is a fantastic book. I highly recommend people check that out. It was written before crypto, but it sort of goes through the history of every major technology throughout history. And there's a general sort of framework that it follows where you have like the introduction of the new technology. That's like the eruption phase. I would say for crypto, that was sort of the introduction of Bitcoin in the early days. The eruption period is typically like, you know, it's lots of nerds and tinkerers that are sort of playing with the tech, but it's unclear how you're going to use that technology. The market doesn't really know what to do with it yet. And then you kind of move from eruption to a frenzy period, typically. And this is when venture capital will start to come into the market. You still don't have fully clear use cases, but you do have investment. Typically during the frenzy period, you get these financial bubbles, which we've certainly seen in crypto. Typically the market like just totally overshoots like what's possible with the current infrastructure that's been built. And then you end up with a wipeout phase. And I think we're kind of coming out of this frenzy period. I would say the frenzy period was really sort of the introduction of Ethereum in 2015. And then you had that ICO boom in 2017. That was really the first big bubble in crypto. And that kind of has sort of like played out. That's when a lot of venture capital came into the industry and a lot of it stayed. And you sort of had the crypto winter of 2018, 2019, but we came out of that again with COVID and another sort of frenzy period. I think we're sort of coming out of the frenzy period and we're entering the turning point. And the turning points are typically when you see lots of, you know, regulators start to get involved. You start to see governments getting involved. And it's usually because there's been a wipeout, because financial leverage has been wiped out of the system. Consumers have been hurt. You know, frauds have been revealed. We've seen all of this, right? So when you sort of look at this framework, it's almost eerie how closely crypto is following this framework. And I think crypto gets a bad rap for, you know, the FTXs of the world. But we've seen this in almost every other industry as well as it kind of comes into being. So that's kind of my view, is we're sort of on the cusp of this turning point where throughout the world, we're going to see regulation come into this industry. We're going to see the people that are here building real products and services start to take over the industry. And it's going to become much more commercialized. Enterprises are going to be involved, regulated markets, new data structures. And as this happens, the market gets clear consensus on like, okay, this is how we're going to use this technology. This is the future direction. And there's much less of a stigma around crypto as the industry starts to mature. And so I think that's kind of where we're at. Once that happens, that's typically where you get like a much bigger hockey stick growth coming out of that. So I think that's kind of what's ahead of us. So I think the timing of producing a report like this is super, super important as well.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's quite a fascinating time to be in this space as we are at this turning point. And as we've only quite recently started seeing these different kind of investment strategies or models start rolling out onto the market for these blockchain networks, I wanted to ask how your framework, how does it differ from the existing models or frameworks already out on the market?
Yeah, there's some good work out there. I've reviewed, you know, probably almost everything that's been put out there at this point. VanEck has a fantastic report that they put out earlier in 2023, which goes through almost like a addressable market analysis, which we incorporated a similar framework as one of our kind of valuation strategies. Fidelity has done a great job. They're putting out a lot of good research. There's plenty of independent analysts on Twitter and LinkedIn and places like that are putting out really good analysis. I think the framework is slightly different in that it sort of takes you through the history of open source technology. It takes you through all these critical concepts that are just fundamentally different with crypto when compared to, you know, how you would potentially analyze a traditional company. And so I think we focused on those core concepts first. And then we get into the new sort of KPIs, benchmarks, metrics, all the data that we source from Token Terminal. We go into that, and that's kind of probably what separates it. I think we also have taken this approach of like, there is no consensus on how to value Ethereum. So we propose a multiple frameworks, multiple valuation methodologies, and try to see, does the price target sort of align across a number of different ways to look at it? And so that's another angle that we took to sort of differentiate. But I think it's just really, really comprehensive. We try to write it in a very non-technical way as well, so that really anybody, you don't have to be an MBA from Harvard to kind of understand this.
Yeah, exactly how it should be. It needs to be a very cohesive approach, taking into account all of the different metrics and data points that are possible. And it was great that we at Token Terminal got the privilege to be able to power your data needs for this report. And speaking about data, could you quickly mention what types of data were the most central for your framework and why you chose those data points?
Yeah, 100%. So first of all, Token Terminal has been like my number one data provider kind of from the start. So it was kind of a natural fit for you guys to power the data for the Ethereum investment framework. But I just like the way that Token Terminal presents data. And I think you guys are creating some of the best, almost like accounting standards for the industry. And so for someone like me, that's just trying to deeply understand like which ecosystems to start with have really strong network effects. And so you can get all this information through Token Terminal in very easy to navigate dashboards where I can see what's happening with developers. I can see what's happening with smart contract development. I can see what's happening with daily active users, which with transactions. I can see how the ecosystem is starting to scale out with layer twos and the activity that's sort of being built on top. And then you can sort of start to look at, you know, which applications or which protocols are driving the most value through the tech stack and start to analyze, okay, if a user comes through the Uniswap interface and they're going through Arbitrum, you know, how does the value accrue through that tech stack? How much of the transaction goes to Uniswap LPs versus Arbitrum sequencer versus Ethereum validators, right? These are the types of concepts that investors need to understand if you're going to invest in this in the tech stack. And I can get all of that data in a very easy way through Token Terminal. So we incorporate all of this in the framework and we go all the way back to 2015. So from day one, we have everything. We have, you know, basically year over year analysis of how the network has progressed. And so I think that gives a very strong foundation for anybody to see, okay, there's like a clear network effect that has been built here. And you can start to sort of forecast where that's going, especially as the technology scales, matures, you know, as some of these problems with throughput are solved with layer twos, things like that. But yeah, it's extremely comprehensive. I think we cover almost every important data point or metric that one could look at. And Token Terminal just makes it super easy to do that. So,
yeah, thank you. And as this is a new technology and the frameworks that are being put together need to take into account aspects of things that we are not familiar with from more traditional finance. So you can't just take existing frameworks and copy paste them to crypto. But at the same time, when you're creating new frameworks, you rarely need to reinvent the wheel entirely. So in your approach, have there been any particular economic or financial theories that have influenced the framework that you put together or that you've been able to use as inspiration or at least copy some aspects of?
Yeah, it's a great, great question. You know, when I was in college, like I was probably like many people, I learned investing through Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, a lot of the books that those guys put out. Obviously, they're not friendly to crypto, but they're, you know, the framework for investing for me has always been through fundamental analysis, cash flow analysis, looking for moats, looking for, you know, these core concepts do not change for me when you look at crypto. So the analysis is looking at cash flows, right? That's what we're anchoring to at the end of the day. So we're taking these frameworks from traditional finance, but then there's many, like I mentioned, there's just all these new concepts that come into play with crypto, new business models, new metrics, new data, new concepts. So I think it's a combination of both, which I think is interesting. You have like these new sort of things in crypto, like Ethereum burns tokens, and that looks like a stock buyback. So we do a lot of like this analysis where we take these new things with the business model on public blockchains, and then we compare it to things that traditional investors will understand and will be familiar to how they think. And I think that's a lot of the value that comes out of this report, is that we always tie it back to like, this is something you've seen before. Yes, it's different, but you can sort of wrap this around a framework that you're more comfortable with. So that's, I think that's something that we focused on. But yeah, it's always anchored to fundamental analysis.
For sure. And I think the best frameworks become timeless. Like you said there, I remember my time in uni, I read The Intelligent Investor from cover to cover probably an unlimited amount of times. And even though it is for like the stock market, you can adapt it to the crypto space as well. There are just certain principles in there that definitely work.
Yeah. And we take for granted that like the way that we do analysis of like value, you know, fundamental analysis, that it was just always that way. But a lot of these concepts were created by people like Warren Buffett. And I think firms like Token Terminal, analysts that are on the bleeding edge of this stuff today are sort of creating these new frameworks for crypto, which is super exciting to me.
Yeah, it is. And who knows, these frameworks that you're putting together could end up being the timeless ones through which in 50 years time, we look back and say, this is actually a no-brainer. This is the exact framework through which we should have been thinking about these blockchain networks. And then moving on to the practical implementation of this framework. For someone that's looking to utilize the Ethereum investment framework, how would you recommend they approach it?
Yeah, good question. You know, it's a PDF document, but it has all these links. So it's almost an interactive document where all of the sections, the entire table of contents is clickable. Then you can click from every page and go back to the table of contents. There's a glossary of terms at the end of the document as well. And we highlight those terms throughout the document. If it's a term you haven't come across before, you click it, you go right to the definition, easily navigate back. So it's kind of like this interactive document, and it's designed that way. But yeah, it's 100+ pages. So it's not something you're going to sit down and just kind of go through all of that at once. So it is designed to be sort of left open. Each section or each chapter can sort of be, you know, read on its own and kind of come back to. It's designed to be something where it's open, you read through it, maybe you look at some data to sort of understand it a little bit better. You come back to it, and these concepts will start to slowly kind of seep into how you think through how value is accruing and how to kind of develop a fundamental framework for this stuff. But yeah, it's comprehensive, but each section sort of stands on its own. And it's designed to stand the test of time.
Yeah. And would you say, are there any specific sections or concepts that someone should like focus on first?
Yeah, I think we tried to make it flow in the direction of like, these are the important concepts first. Like, this is the fundamental breakthrough in computer science that you should know about. And this is why this stuff really matters. This is how the internet works today. These are sort of this new, I talk a lot about like digital property rights and this concept of like a global accounting ledger. And I think these are really important concepts. They're very abstract concepts to understand, but we can kind of compare the way that the internet works today to what public blockchains are introducing, and then what that potentially means for finance and some of these other applications. So those are really important, just fundamental, just ideas to anchor yourself to so that you know, okay, this is like a breakthrough in computer science. And then the rest of it is fundamental analysis using on-chain data to assess network effects, to assess value accrual, cash flows, users, all of those things. So it sort of flows in that direction. But I think you really need to sort of anchor yourself to the value proposition and like the fundamental breakthrough in computer science first.
And then next, it would be great if we could kind of walk through the framework's approach to actually valuing Ethereum. And I know in this question, we're trying to cover kind of 50 pages of content in one. So for what's relevant for the scope of this session, it would maybe be great if you, at a very high level, walk through the different perspectives and angles through which you approach valuing ETH.
Yeah, we came at it from a few different angles. You know, typically when you're trying to sort of forecast and provide a valuation on a capital asset, you're going to forecast what the potential cash flows are, you know, use some assumptions to get there, apply a discount rate and get to like a discounted cash flow analysis, net present value. We do have this analysis in the Ethereum investment framework. So we looked at all of the revenues since EIP 1559 as one analysis, daily revenues, and we sort of forecast that out with some assumptions, apply a discount rate, get to a present value. So that's one sort of very, very traditional type framework that you could apply. We've done an addressable market analysis, which is more looking at, you know, what are all the potential use cases for Ethereum and how big are these industries today? What percentage of that could potentially move on chain? And we used 2030, so about 7 years from now as our target there. We apply a percentage on chain for every industry. We look at the revenues, we apply a take rate for Ethereum, And we get to, again, that's another sort of discount cash flow analysis. We apply discount rates there. So that's sort of the two like sort of DCF analysis approaches. And I'll just pause and just say that, like, you know, doing a total addressable market analysis on something like Ethereum is very useful, but we don't take this approach that, like, this is when you introduce a new technology into the world, like, it's very difficult to forecast, you know, what's the addressable market for that. It could be much larger than we're even potentially identifying, but it's still useful to go through that exercise. And it's a lot of work to go through all of these industries, forecast growth rates of every industry, and then potentially what percentage of that moves on chain, and then, you know, who captures the revenue of that. But it's still a useful exercise regardless. The third sort of methodology that we take is this, like, idea of gross domestic product. And this is taking a little bit of a different approach, where we look at Ethereum as, you know, base layer infrastructure, almost as if you would look at, like, a country, and then you have ETH, the currency, on top of that. But you have all of these applications in this economy that is leveraging the infrastructure of Ethereum. And so Token Terminal does a great job of presenting a lot of data by sector. And so we look at this data and we say, okay, this is the gross domestic product that was produced by the Ethereum ecosystem. And that's another way to do more of a relative valuation against another L1 to sort of assess the strength of that ecosystem. This is almost like how you would compare currencies, right? This is almost a little bit of a different angle, a different approach, where the value of the dollar versus the euro could be looked at as the strength of the United States economy in some ways. And so that's a slightly different approach. Within that analysis, we look at, you know, what is the fundamental demand for Ethereum? And we're comparing that similarly to what is the fundamental demand for the US dollar, right? Why is there a constant bid on the US dollar? And we look at, like, the petrodollar market and the fact that, you know, throughout the world, if you want to access oil through OPEC nations, you need to acquire dollars first. And that creates a constant bid on the dollar. This concept is somewhat similar to Ethereum, which is sort of digital oil. But if you want to access that digital oil, access services within the Ethereum network, you need to convert your local currency to Ethereum to do so. So there's a sort of constant bid there. So we look at that analysis as sort of the third element that goes into this. We also look at cycles, right? Crypto moves in cycles. We look at a lot of the KPIs, metrics, and the growth of the fundamental innovation on chain. And then we sort of map that to the price action that we've seen in prior cycles to get to, like, a potential valuation in the next cycle. And then we look at just, like, a very high level approach, looking at, okay, the entire crypto market cap got to, you know, $3 trillion in the last cycle in 2021. We're looking at and saying, okay, what's the potential, you know, looking back at where it was in 2017 and prior, what's a target sort of for where that could potentially get to in the next cycle? And then we look at, okay, what percentage of that will likely be Bitcoin and Ethereum? How much is potentially Bitcoin? How much is some of these other layer ones? And we back into a price per token that way as well. So there's really, like, five different approaches that we take. Again, we're not saying this is the best way to do it. We're just trying to give everybody the frameworks to think through this and then make their own decision with what we present there. But a lot of work, a lot of analysis, a lot of number crunching obviously went into those frameworks.
Yeah, definitely. And it is such valuable work. And all of these frameworks, the numbers that you have crunched there, you update them quarterly, right?
Yes. Yeah. So these are getting updated quarterly. Like I said, this is all a moving target. So the Ethereum investment framework is going to be updated. All the new technology developments, all the new data, as well as these valuation targets.
That is also so valuable to be able to kind of look back and see how things have developed, because as a new technology, things move so fast. So you can pretty quickly also start pinpointing which of these kind of valuation frameworks end up looking like the most accurate ones and which ones end up suiting the network best and how things play out. And as you're putting these frameworks together for an asset that does not have the abundance of research or frameworks out there that a more traditional asset would already have, you definitely run into some challenges when researching, because you can't always rely on the fact that someone else has already bumped into this problem and solved it, and you can just Google it and find a solution. It is quite likely still today that no one has written about it, made a research report about it, spoke about it anywhere. So you are somewhat on your own. So there are definitely some challenges that come with that when you are trying to put together these frameworks. So what would you say are the biggest kind of learnings or aha moments that you have had when going through this process?
It's a great question. And, you know, I think a lot of the aha moments for me are my approach with how I do analysis and how I look at things is I'm always trying to get as much feedback as possible from the market. I write a lot on LinkedIn and things like this because I want people to poke holes in what I'm doing so that I can get smarter and get better. And what I have found is, like, even the deepest skeptics of crypto have a hard time. They'll sort of poke holes in this, and I've had a little bit of that, but there's almost like, I think I've gotten to a point where it's really hard to do that, which is sort of like the goal is like to get to just take all the feedback and present things in a way that people would just say, okay, that's interesting, right? Like even if you are extremely skeptical of crypto and public blockchains, you would look at the framework and say, this is interesting, right? Like there's obviously something here. And that's kind of somewhat the goal of what I'm going for. I think, you know, there are certainly dead ends that you run into as you're doing a lot of this analysis. This is a great book, Ethereum for Business, that I was reading this as I kind of went through the Q3 update. And that's written by Paul Brody from Ernst & Young. And he kind of goes through a lot of the interesting sort of enterprise stuff that they're working on with like pretty big clients that you probably don't hear so much about on crypto Twitter and sort of lots of the different podcasts and kind of media outlets. It's a little bit more behind the scenes. And so there were a lot of learnings from that book that also went into the Ethereum investment framework and some of these enterprise use cases for Ethereum. Ernst & Young is 100% committed to the Ethereum network. They've built a layer 2 that's focused on privacy so that enterprises can sort of onboard there. So that's been kind of an interesting insight. And then like the other thing that I really challenge myself on is really making sure that, you know, you have all these private blockchains that have been out there. They've been out there since, you know, probably going back to 2017, 2018 period, and really trying to figure out, like, is it possible that there's two like parallel systems and you have like private blockchains and public blockchains? And like my thesis is that no, like that's not actually how this is going to play out. Like everything that's on private blockchains will eventually port over to public blockchains, and there's probably lots of people that are sort of offsides on that. So I spent a ton of time talking with engineers that have worked on, you know, both private and public blockchains to really like hone in on, you know, does this make sense or not? That's something that Paul Brody talks about a lot in his book as well. They've worked with many, many enterprises that want to be involved with these private blockchains, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't. There's zero instances of that actually working, which was for me very enlightening, because that's been my thesis really from day one to begin with. So a lot of learnings, you know, as you really dive into this research. And then, like I said, I'm looking for feedback. I'm looking for people that try to poke holes in it so that we can make it better for next quarter.
That is a great approach. I think what you said in the beginning there about having someone who has been extremely crypto critical read a framework like the one you put together, pause for a moment and acknowledge that, hey, I think I got it. This is actually like a great framework. Even though I still might be skeptical about crypto, this framework seems to work. That's rewarding.
That's a win. That's a huge win if I can get that. Exactly.
Yeah, it is. Now, as you mentioned, feedback is incredibly important when you're developing something new like this. Have you to date received any notable criticism or feedback about the framework that you'd be able to share?
I really haven't. So it's largely been like super, super positive. Like I've shared this with, you know, I have a lot of contacts in some of the large asset management firms, like in the Boston area, shared it broadly with like the RIA community, people that are trying to educate others about crypto, public blockchains. So I think this is a tool. There's a lot of people that are incentivized to find the best ways to talk about Ethereum, crypto, public blockchains. I think there's a lot of value that they get in reading through this and then incorporating the way that we talk about things with how they talk to their clients as well. So the feedback has been probably too positive. I would like it to be. I would like to get some more negative feedback because that's how you get better. But I would say I don't have anything, unfortunately, that's like some really negative feedback or some or enlightening constructive criticism just yet. But I'm hoping we get there.
But the abundance of like positive feedback is always good. Product market fit is definitely there. This has been much needed. And Ethereum is a great place to start. But how about when we think about creating similar frameworks for other crypto assets? Are you planning on expanding on coverage?
Yes, 100%. And, you know, people that follow me, follow my writing, they know I'm not like a there's almost like a tribal nature to some crypto ecosystems where you have like maximalists. I am not that at all. I just use the data, and the data informs sort of what we talk about. So we started with Ethereum just because it has the most robust cash flows, strongest network effects in the industry. But there are certainly other, and we make a strong case for why we believe Ethereum will be around for a very long time, but we don't have this view that it's the only blockchain or that it's a winner take all type situation. So yes, we have been following Solana and ecosystem developments there, Cosmos, some of these other layer ones. We'll probably do one for Bitcoin as well at some point. And we have an analyst now at the DeFi Report that's more focused on Solana. So we'll have more Solana stuff coming. It's not like this sort of tribal. Even if you go on crypto Twitter, you'll see people in the Solana community fighting with people in the Ethereum community. We stay out of all that, and we just look at the data and let that inform the analysis. So
yeah, it's good to be objective in this space. That what we also really strive for at Token Terminal. You're in a much better place when you're able to objectively look at the tech and kind of ignore the politics and everything else behind it. And I guess that a lot of these concepts that you introduce in this framework as well will be you'll be able to kind of utilize them in frameworks for other crypto assets, but then at the same time, they all have very different economics behind them. So they do need to be tweaked quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if we do other networks, they'll be smaller. They're not going to be 100 pages. We go through a lot of like the big concepts in the Ethereum one that I think people will understand, but we won't repeat a lot of that. So it'll be more focused on what's different about those networks. And then I think also just shorter sort of investment memo style reports like we do through the DeFi report. We'll have more of those coming as well.
That's great. Now, back to like Ethereum research and insights. What's next for you in the realm of that?
Yeah, so I think the industry like continues. There's so much going on, as you know, right now. There's so much development within the layer two ecosystem. There's so much happening on the regulatory front. You know, when you look at just globally, it's a global asset class, right? So I think there's just so much more coming here. Excited to just continue to leverage Token Terminal to sort of bring these, like, try to bootstrap these fundamental sort of accounting frameworks into the market so that we can achieve consensus around some of these things. And I think this is where you start to get buy-in from regulators and from Congress here in the U.S. about how, you know, investor protections, compliance, we can have all of this for crypto. I have the belief that like platforms like Token Terminal actually make crypto more transparent and protect investors in ways that you don't even see in traditional private markets. I think there's more transparency here. And as the industry matures and as these new frameworks and regulations come out of Congress, I believe that something like Token Terminal serves as almost like a Yahoo Finance or an Edgar database for crypto, where these new products will launch, they will list with Token Terminal, investors will have all of the necessary data, they'll understand the business models, you know, there will be probably audits of these things, you'll have financial statements, and this is a continuous financial statement. You're not waiting till the end of the quarter to access this data. So that, to me, is the future of crypto. And that's why I'm super excited to be able to put these frameworks together, use Token Terminal to analyze a lot of this data, and be part of sort of helping this industry achieve that kind of more mature status.
I tend to agree with everything that you just said there. Very well put. Now, on the DeFi report, you wrote that as an output of the work that you put into putting together this framework, you've concluded that Ethereum will grow into a global monopoly over the next decade. Now, could you maybe elaborate a bit on that? Where do you see Ethereum in the next 5 to 10 years and how you see the investment landscape changing?
Yeah, so like, you know, I think it's important to, this is really more, and we talk about a lot of these concepts early on in the Ethereum investment framework of like why network technologies tend to sort of mature into monopolies. And so when you look at Ethereum and you assess the network effects that are occurring there, and I think a mistake that a lot of people make is they'll say, well, Ethereum is slow, or there's some flaw with Ethereum, and that's just going to be disrupted by another faster blockchain with more throughput. And like throughout history, this is the best product almost never wins. It's really the one that has the network effects, that has the good enough technology. And then because there's such a flywheel of a network effect around that, you're sort of like betting against human ingenuity if you think like these problems won't get solved. And that's sort of my thesis, is that the network effects are so strong that you just have this global hive mind of talent that comes in and looks at all the problems and says, okay, these are menu items of things to solve for me to make my mark in the world. And that's where you get the layer twos and you get all this development. So that's sort of the thesis, is like that's how this is going to play out. That becomes a global monopoly, similar to, you know, the way the internet works. Like Ethereum is an open, permissionless system. The internet is an open, permissionless, decentralized system. And the internet has this constant flywheel of innovation. And it's because it's permissionless. You don't have to ask for permission to build an application, to launch a website, to do all these things on the internet. And that concept applies to Ethereum as well. And so you could see that this is something that's going to be a continuous evolution, continuous innovation, and it can't be stopped. And so you can sort of map that forward and say, this looks like it's probably going to be a global monopoly, and it's probably going to grow in a similar way to how the internet grew out over time. Did that answer the question there?
Yeah, I think you did a pretty good job at answering that question, because I mean, it is, and I wanted to address that because it is, of course, a big statement that putting together a report like this, the output is that Ethereum will grow into a global monopoly. That is massive. But I mean, and I do tend to agree that power laws will come into fruition in the blockchain space, and Ethereum is in a very good position to kind of be the winner there.
Yeah. And again, you know, that is the conclusion of the theory of investment framework. At the same time, we don't have this view that it's the only blockchain. We think there's probably, you know, 3 to 5 major layer ones, and then potentially a longer tail of maybe slightly less important ones. And even with Ethereum becoming the global monopoly, as we stated, the Ethereum investment framework is really designed to say, okay, how does value accrue through there? Because just because Ethereum is the global sort of monopoly, that doesn't mean that all the value accrues to ETH, the asset. It could accrue, you know, and that's a lot of the exercise and the value that we're trying to create by putting these frameworks out there.
And I think that's also the most important question, because if you think about the fact that 10 years from now, we'll have just a few giants, few monopolies, we would have just replicated the situation in Web 2, where we have a few big tech giants or monopolies, but the core difference will be how value accrues through that stack and what the different stakeholders are involved. So there's a lot of work to do in better understanding that.
Yes, 100%. Yes. And I, you know, when I say monopoly too, I think people get like, it sort of strikes an emotional chord sometimes, because when you think of monopoly, you do think of Google, Facebook, like these closed monopolies, whereas Ethereum is permissionless, just like the internet. And so I view the internet as sort of a monopoly. Nobody really thinks of it that way because it's open, it's permissionless, and nobody's sort of blocked out from that. And so I view Ethereum in the same way. So yes, it's a monopoly, but it's not like a threat to anything because it's permissionless. Anybody can access it, audit the data, build a business on top of it. And as long as it remains credibly neutral like that, then I think it can be a monopoly that isn't necessarily a threat to anything.
Yeah. The internet is a protocol that just happens to lack a value capture mechanism. Now we have Ethereum, which has a built-in value capture mechanism. So there we go.
That summarizes the framework perfectly right there.
Very good. That's a perfect note to end on. And I mean, we managed to cover 105 pages in under 50 minutes. So thank you so much, Michael. You really do always know what you're talking about. Thank you for kind of putting these into layman's terms. It makes it easier for people to approach this topic. And the fact that the report is out there for free, downloadable to anyone who's interested, is also incredible. So thank you for the work you put into this and what you're doing to push the industry forward.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for asking awesome questions. Always fun to chat with you. For anybody watching, if you Google the DeFi report, the Ethereum investment framework, maybe we'll put a link in the show notes, should be able to find it. I'm super excited that we were able to make it free this quarter. So it's free. It's just, and it's available out there. The Ethereum investment framework, Michael Nato. If you Google that, you should be able to find it.
Definitely. And we will speak again soon. I'm looking forward to having you on this pod more frequently going forward.
Likewise, Oscar. All right, man. Take care.